Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone. Today, it is my pleasure to interview Adriana Tikka, and we'll talk about SaaS content marketing. We'll talk about strategy and implementation of content marketing. Welcome to the show, Adriana.
Hi, Natalie. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you've been in the field for many years. Tell us, how did you get started working with SaaS companies?
It was a natural transition, I think. As a marketer, I worked for tech companies as a marketing manager, and then I started moving on to freelancing. At first, I did all sorts of gigs in all sorts of industries, but then I realized that I need to go back to tech because that was definitely my passion. And SaaS is the niche that I'm most focused on. It's the type of company that I enjoy working with the most because the growth you see in this field, the speed with which it's happening and the things you can do to help with that growth are absolutely unparalleled.
So content marketing strategy, just content marketing in general, is pretty interesting area of opportunity because I feel like so many founders do not pay closer attention to that. In any step of startup journey, it's important, right? And I hear so many founders talk about, okay, I'm just launching my product and I want to do pay-per-click, for example. But then they don't have an understanding of their audience, who they are, what they talk about, the terms that they use. So I feel like it's like from the very beginning till the very end, right? Like it's very important. What do you see as far as the content strategy? What do you see?
Well, you're definitely right. Content marketing is crucial in every step of a SaaS, even before you launch, because content marketing can help you create a certain buzz that no other channel can. And you actually said something very interesting about getting to know your audience. I think this is where most startup founders are, okay, maybe not most, but a whole lot of them, start off on the wrong foot because they start to put out content. They write these amazing blog posts at times, but they write it for themselves, and you can see that. You can read between the lines and see that they do not know their audience. If you start by researching your buyer persona in depth, then you know exactly what to say and, more importantly, how to say it. And I think this phase is crucial for every marketing tactic, not just content marketing. Because if you take the time to research your buyer persona and understand what their needs are and how you can help in meeting those needs, then you set yourself up for success. Otherwise, you're just making educated guesses and you're bound to get it wrong, you know? And what's amazing is that now we have these amazing tools that can help us get to know our buyer persona. And most of them are SaaS, actually, you know? So you can send out surveys, you can ask people via social media, you can simply ask, what do you need? What other tools you use? What are the areas of your work that you need the most help with? And then all you have to do is look for patterns, you know, tools that people are constantly repeating, or problems that a lot of people in your target audience are facing. As soon as you have those patterns defined, then you can create one or more buyer personas, because you don't really need to have a single buyer persona. But what you need to do is make sure that you understand them and that you always ask why. Why do you need this? Why is it important to you? Because in those very answers, you don't just find the core of your strategy, but actually part of your content marketing. Because when people say, for instance, I struggle a lot with the social media in my day-to-day work because it takes up a lot of time, and you see that, and you see this repeating as a pattern in all your interviews and surveys, then all you have to do is start a landing page or a blog post beginning with, are you wasting too much time on social media? Well, here's how our SaaS can help you do the same thing much easier in much less time. You know, you can basically borrow their own words.
How about, I hear a problem, especially for those that are just starting out, they don't know what industry to go after. And so their landing page or website talks to everyone. And that's what I see the problem is, because first of all, they basically speak to no one because no one understands, yeah, like, right? Exactly. But then they themselves do not know which industry to go after. So do you have any exercises to help founders understand which industry to go after, or at least to start exploring a little bit more?
Well, yes. I mean, you're completely right. If you start out writing for everyone, you'll be writing for no one, because no one wants to be part of, you know, everyone. Everyone needs to be special. And I think that finding the ideal industry to work with starts in the very, very early stages of research. Even as you're building your product, you can simply use the same tools that I mentioned earlier, like surveys and beta testers, to see which of them are a better fit for your product and to see where you can solve the most problems. Following up on the social media example before, you can see a very interesting segmentation for social media marketing SaaS tools, you know, because you could say that they might cater to everyone, because even an individual might need help with scheduling their posts on Instagram or Facebook. But in the end, what most of them are doing, and they're doing it in a very smart way, is target marketing agencies or digital agencies, because that's where their ideal buyer persona is. A digital agency needs a lot more help in managing a lot more social media accounts than an individual. So you can see this amazing positioning that comes from their own research, because most of them even have free plans for one account or for three accounts. You can tell that for them, marketers working for a single company or individuals are not an audience that they plan to increase their MRR with, you know, but marketing agencies, that's where their money is. And I think that's also something very important, because if you only look at what your buyer needs and forget to look at what you need, at what your company needs, then your content marketing might be awesome from a reader's perspective, but it will do absolutely nothing for your bottom line. It's actually a mistake I did in the early days when I launched my digital agency. I used to write this very in-depth post because, based on my research, I figured that people don't know that much about content writing and copywriting and what's the difference between them. So we wrote a lot, and they were good articles. We started to get a lot of traffic, a lot of organic traffic, and I was stoked about it because I figured that the leads couldn't be that far behind, except that they were, you know. Our buyer persona didn't need to be explained what are the stages of writing the perfect landing page. What they needed was to hire us, and that's what we also needed. So I changed my strategy, and instead of writing about creating the perfect sales page, I moved to writing how to hire the perfect digital marketing agency. And this was the intersection between our needs and our readers' needs.
So aligning this content strategy with the goal of your business is important, especially do it at the very beginning. And I actually recently interviewed Joel Kletke. He's the founder of Case Study Buddy. And yeah, talking about, he is saying that first you need to identify, even when we're starting writing the case studies, which is such a narrow, you know, area of content marketing, right? You still need to start with, okay, what's your goal? Do you really want to target this particular industry? And that's why you want to go after an interview and create a case study with this particular client. So you need to take a step back and think about what's the business goal. So I love it. So we understand, we now know that we need to write the content. We know what kind of content and who our target audience is. How about the process of writing the content? Do you have any recommendations for this stage? Where do we choose someone internally? Do we outsource that?
It really depends on the size of your team. Well, what I see as another mistake a lot of bootstrapping startups do is they take on way too much. There's too much on their plate. We see a lot of founders doing their writing themselves, and that's not ideal, because you should be using your time to grow your business, not doing something that can be easily outsourced. And what I found in working with a lot of SaaS companies is that, besides the cost, because it may actually be cheaper to hire someone to do this for you, you get additional benefits. For instance, having an outside point of view, someone who understands your buyer persona from a whole new perspective, and someone who finds it easier to get over themselves, you know, is an added benefit. I saw that looking from the outside, you can find new benefits of the tool you're writing about. It's much easier to do so when you're not completely invested in creating it, because as the builders of us, you sometimes tend to insist too much on the technical aspects, and you forget that you're maybe not writing for a technical audience, and this can get in the way. So
no, I love it. Actually, just recently I'm hosting a mastermind group, and in the group we had one of the founders whose website is so technical, like you just cannot believe how technical it is. And our question to him was, so are you actually talking to those technical people who understand what, you know, this very technical data protection is and data security? And he's like, well, yes. And then I started asking questions. Okay, so your target audience is really any kind of business who, so bottom line is his target audience can anyone who is using, for example, SurveyMonkey as a tool. And so those business owners are not aware about those technical things. So there's basically, he's not addressing 95% of the funnel potential audience that he can speak to, because his audience is very small and not necessarily searching for anything that he's actually selling. So he would need to educate those people, and you cannot educate those people with this such a technical content that you have. So I like that point. And then about hiring the writer, it's so interesting, because when you know who you speak to, when you know the industry that you want to address in your piece of content, then you can actually hire this person who has just that experience working with that particular audience. So for example, if you're writing for a marketing agency, then hire someone who has worked with marketing agencies in the past and can bring you this point of view that you would not know otherwise, right? Or if you're writing for, I don't know, maybe someone who is using, let's say, Squarespace as a website, or like someone who's on Etsy, for example, then you hire specifically who has experience with that. And there's no shortage of talent, right? You go on, the first step for me is always go on Upwork and just post the job, and you'll probably get a bunch of people who has had prior experience working with that particular very small industry or niche. So I love that point of view, that hiring a writer is actually bringing someone on board who has more experience in this particular industry than maybe even you do.
Yeah, and what I also found interesting in, well, I recruit a lot of writers for my agency. So what I realized is that it's far more important to get someone who has a marketing or PR background than it is to have someone who has a writing background. Because as marketers, we can easily emulate different tones of voice, or we can easily understand the buyer persona. Writers, they may be good, they may have all the commas where they're supposed to be, but they do not know how to write for the web. They're writing essays. So this is something that you should always keep in mind when you want to hire someone to do the writing for you. Do they also know marketing? Because in the end, the content that they create for you needs to sell. It doesn't need to read like a Hemingway novel.
Yeah, that's important. And moving to our next subject, implementation and distribution of the content. I see so many founders making mistake of just writing it and publishing it once, thinking that that's where everything stops and basically Google is going to come and, you know, find your great piece of content, right? And the interesting quote that I've heard is that you need to spend 20% writing the content and 80% of your time distributing this content.
Yeah, it's 100% true. Yes, it is, because while we all love for Google to discover our latest piece and make us viral in a split second, that rarely happens. And especially if you're a new company that no one's heard of, then you need to put in the extra work. And I really love going into these not so well-known techniques of promoting. For instance, yes, you can post it on all your social media channels. And I always recommend posting it more than once, because not all your audience is online at the same time in the same day. And evergreen content can be posted again and again. Once again, we have tools to help us with that. We don't need to do it ourselves manually. But then there are other small things that you can do. For instance, you can answer to Haro pitches on Help a Reporter Out and get links back to your content. Or if you mentioned an influencer or someone in your industry in your latest piece, tag them on Facebook, tag them on Twitter, because they will retweet or reshare your post. Everybody loves to be mentioned and be called an influencer. The same goes for using reports and statistics in your content. For instance, there are a lot of companies like Gartner that you can tag. Okay, maybe Gartner is not the best example because they're huge and they maybe will not retweet you, but other smaller outlets that put out their own research reports that you can use to make your content better are definitely eager to retweet and to be mentioned and to earn backlinks. So my point is, you need to be social with your content. You need to make it look like a big discussion among experts in the field.
Very good. How about the frequency of publishing content? We talked about that, you know, you need to spend much more time promoting the content than writing. But still, let's say that we do all of that. How often would you recommend to publish a content? And is there at all such a thing as, you know, a schedule that you need to adhere to?
I believe there is, yes. You should have a schedule because people are creatures of habit. And if you've accustomed your readers or your email subscribers that with publishing a new piece every week or every month, then that new piece should be there weekly or monthly. And regarding your first question, the frequency, again, it depends. It depends on your bandwidth. You don't need to stretch yourself too thin and to publish content every day just for the sake of publishing. Instead of publishing poorly written and thin content that neither the users nor Google love, but doing it often because you read somewhere or heard in a podcast someone saying that you should publish every day, you should be realistic and think about how many topics can you realistically publish per month and still bring value for your business and for your... But once you've set on a number, do try and keep to it. You have studies from HubSpot, I think, that say that you should publish 16 times per month in order to get to make a dent in your SEO rankings. And that's great. Of course, the more you publish, the more the better you will rank and the more leads you will capture, but only if the content is quality content, authority content, or 10x content, whatever you want to call it. It has to be damn good to make a dent in your reputation and your bottom line. So if you're not sure that you can produce 16 pieces of amazing content per month, then maybe cut it down to 8, 4, even 2. And another trick that you can use if you don't have the bandwidth to promote, to create a lot of content, is to repurpose it. For instance, this podcast that we're talking on right now can be transcribed and turned into a blog post, because I'm sure some people in your audience would prefer to read it rather than to listen. It can also be a video. If you have several podcasts that are on similar topics, you can create an ebook or a white paper that tackles this subject even more in depth. I mean, the options are endless and there are really endless permutations between types of content. And what's great about repurposing is that you can reach more audiences, people who prefer a certain format over the other. And of course, it takes things off your plate.
Right. Let's talk about evaluating our efforts and how well those pieces of content that we produce actually doing. How do we know if it's something that we need to continue doing, or, you know, when is the time for us to say, okay, there's something that we need to do about it because it's not working?
Well, I think this could be easily summed up in a single phrase: follow the money, you know, because ultimately you're creating content to pad up your bottom line. So if a certain type of content or a certain approach to a certain type of content is not working for you and is not bringing in leads, or is not converting, then you should ditch it. You shouldn't feel remorseful about it. Even if all your competitors are doing, if it's not working for you, you should ditch it. This is why I always advise our clients, our agency's clients, to track relevant KPIs. You know, forget about traffic, forget about social media followers. Those are vanity metrics. They will not pay your bills. Instead, look at your latest blog post. Did it bring any new leads? If so, how many? How many of them were you able to convert with the latest white paper you put out? If you can attach a number to each of your KPIs, then you will know what you can change and what you have to keep in your content strategy, because it's constantly evolving. Yes, you need to have a strategy. Yes, you need to research your buyer persona, but you don't need to be dead set on those things. You need to accept that your buyer persona will evolve with time, just like your business does. And it's important to make these iterations as often as possible.
You know what? I think majority of founders, I have a number 90% in my head, just because 90% of founders, I feel like, that's not a statistic somewhere you can read, but I feel like 90% of founders actually don't do it. They do not evaluate their performance of their content. And so they keep producing the same content. Just this week, I spoke to one of the founders. There are two co-founders. And they actually hired an SEO person, an SEO, by the way, that's a very known SEO consultant in the SaaS space. And that person recommended basically to keep producing the pieces of content that they already have on their website without evaluating what they already have. And I think that that's a huge mistake, because if you have already, and they had probably like more than a few dozen pieces of content already produced on their website about the same topics that this consultant recommended them to work on. And then I basically came in and trying to help them actually implement this feedback. And I said, you know what, I think there is a big piece of this information is missing, and that's you already have these pieces of content. Let's see what we can do with it. Because, well, first, Google likes older content, right? And exactly. Google likes the content to be updated. So if you have an older blog post that you can add more information to, please do that instead of writing a similar piece of content, a new one with a similar number of words, word count, update existing piece of content, add as much information as possible. Maybe you have a video, maybe you have an additional statistic, additional screenshots, like all of that, add to your existing piece of content, additional keywords, and then see the difference that that's going to make. So I just want to share this word of caution, is that even their well-known consultants and coaches talk about the things that not necessarily going to be the best bang for your buck. So, and I don't know the solution for you to know how do you know who to trust, because there are so many opinions, right? I don't know the answer to that question. Do you?
Well, you should trust the numbers. You know, if a famous SEO consultant tells you to write more, then maybe ask why and ask for the numbers to back up this claim, you know? Because of course it's very easy to say, write more. I run a writing agency. I want to encourage people to write more and hire us to do it. But in the end, I know that if I do this and people don't get the results, then my clients will stop coming back to us. And that's not where I want to go with my business. I think that honesty and relying on numbers are the best things that you can do. And you can take a page from Joel's manual with the case studies, and really, really focus on mining your buyers in depth, because what Joel is doing with his company is pretty amazing, and the case studies that they create are actually have the ability to bring in new clients because they are very well researched. And again, circling back to how we started this conversation, it's all about research and getting to know your buyer persona, because no matter what your SEO consultant tells you, if you know that your buyer persona doesn't need yet another article on the benefits of social media, then perhaps you should stay away from it.
Sounds good. Where can listeners know more about you and connect with you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, and on the two websites that I run, copywriter.net and iden.pro.
Very good. Thank you so much, Adriana. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you to Natalie. Same here.
And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone? And so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself, because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people. Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also look on the bright side, this is also the easiest problem for you to fix, because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance, and as a result, remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, natalieluneva.com/team. natalieluneva.com/team.